What we don't need in the midst of struggle is shame for being human. My name is Andrea, and this is Adult Child. Welcome back to Adult Child, where we take a deep dive into the impact of growing up in a dysfunctional family. Ahoy, my dear shit shows. For any new listeners, my name is Andrea. I am a total and complete shit show. I am a recovering alcoholic. I am a recovering adult child of an alcoholic and dysfunctional family. I am not a therapist. I am not a professional. I am just another bozo on this healing bus who facilitates raw and real conversations about what the hell to do about a fucked up childhood. And yes, we curse here. You've been warned. I'm an acquired taste. You've been warned. Welcome aboard this hot mess of a ship. So today, we are taking a revisit to, I would say, one of the most powerful interviews to date, one of the most powerful episodes of Adult Child. And this was with Alwyn, who is, or rather, I should say, she was the host of the podcast Let Me Be Free, which she hosted with her sister, and it was about their trauma healing journey. And this conversation is some vulnerable shit, okay? This is a very vulnerable and raw conversation. This is the prime example of how shining a light on the shame and pain of our past is the path to freedom. And this episode is for the parent whose unresolved trauma has resulted in them not being the parent that they want to be and is ashamed to say that out loud. This episode is for the person whose unresolved trauma has resulted in them, you know, harming or hurting others or just not being the person that they truly are deep down inside. All with the understanding that we are not bad people, okay? We are just the result of our childhood experiences, experiences that altered our brain, that altered our nervous system at a time in our life when we really didn't have a say in the matter, when we didn't have a choice in the matter. So I am hoping, or rather I know that this episode will be a relief to many of you listening out there who think that you're the only one who has, you know, thought, said, or did certain things to let you know that you're not alone and that healing is absolutely possible for you. Trigger warning on this episode. Honestly, I think we all know that there's an unsaid trigger warning on every single episode, right? But I'm going to give an official trigger warning on this conversation, as it does include discussion of childhood sexual abuse. There is also, she mentions that she used MDMA as part of her healing experience. And I do just want to say that I don't officially promote using psychedelics without being under the supervision or guidance of a healing practitioner. So let's just get the damn show on the road. But first, let's talk about why you, yes, you, need to Dan the Join Shit Show, my online support community, where we have a minimum of 6 weekly groups. This is a support community at your fingertips, in your back pocket, where you can connect with other fellows who are doing the damn work to heal. And also, I just want to say that this upcoming weekend, we have a shit show retreat at the Jersey Shore. So we also have in-person retreats. So this is not just online support community. This is like a real community, okay? This is a place where you can actually make real friends, real connection. This is my chosen family, and I created this community because I needed a community. I created this community because I was looking for my tribe, a group of people who were raw, real, vulnerable, and authentic like me, who we're committed to doing this work to heal, but also want to have a little fun and laugh at times too, and don't take themselves too seriously 24/7. So this is the place to be if you are looking for a healing community. There's no other place like it out there, okay? So you, the person that's been wanting to join for forever, how about you just give it a go? How about we just give it a shot? It's less than $1 a day. I know there are hundreds of you that have been wanting to join for years. Yes, you, the person that's looking to see if I'm behind you, if I'm staring behind you. I am. Let's do it, okay? See the link in the show notes, or you can go to adultchildpodcast.com/shitshow. Next, give me a little follow on the Insta, on the TikTok, at adultchildpod. And last but not least, whatever you do, please, 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 please give me a 5-star rating, a damn 5-star rating, I should say, on Apple, on Spotify. It really helps in reaching more listeners, more suffering adult children out there. Thank you. Love you all.
So today we are joined by Alwyn. She's the host of the Let Me Be Free podcast, which I was a guest on. And then she also has a support community called the Let Me Be Free, the Wounded Inner Child group. Did I mess that up?
No, that's perfect.
Okay. And here's a real mind fuck. So she's an Irish person in Australia.
Yeah. that is a complicated one.
Yeah. When we talked before, I was like, wow, I didn't know that in Western Australia that they had like Irish sounding accents. I'm like, yeah. This is so weird.
I know. It's crazy. It's crazy, especially doing the podcast and all the rest of the stuff. You know, it's when they hear me, they're like, oh, you're Irish. I'm like, yes, I'm Irish. I'm just living in Australia.
And how long have you been there again?
13 years.
Wow. And you went straight from Ireland, right?
Yeah, Ireland to Perth in Australia.
And how did you pick it again?
Oh, my husband's brother and sister-in-law were here. So we came over to them thinking we'll come for a year, you know, because my husband had lost his job. And then, you know, 13 years later, we're probably one of the last ones to be here. Most everyone else went back.
Mm. Why did his brother come there?
All of us, because it was the recession in Ireland. Mm. So most people were losing their jobs at that point. And so you were kind of forced to leave. But I'm so grateful. Like, honestly, I think that it's actually when you think about the trajectory of healing, especially, I think that so many of us that immigrate, we nearly do it from that vantage point of getting space so that we can open up the wounds, so that we can heal. And that's been our case. Like my husband and I, we're the ones that have stayed away the longest, and my sister as well is here. And, you know, because we've been here, I feel like it's given us that permission and that capacity to open up Pandora's box, essentially, because you need that space, you know, you need that space to really allow yourself to go into that deep shithole that is trauma, you know?
What was your understanding of your trauma when you moved there?
Oh, my God. Absolutely none.
Really?
Like, I was toxic positivity on a stick. I was never angry. I was never sad. I was never upset. Always positive, super duper positive about the world. Everything's great. I'm loving life and loving you, and let's all love each other. And
you one of those.
Yep.
I can't stand those people.
Yeah, I can't stand them now either, because you know, I can see now, obviously, what that really meant for me. But the way my trauma really showed up, to be honest, was, and I didn't understand it as a trauma symptom, but definitely severe codependence with my husband, first of all. Mm-hmm. And secondly, severe eating disorder. Like, I didn't have bulimia or anorexia, but I would think about food all day long. I would wake up in the morning and I would just look at myself in the mirror and just pinch my stomach and just have that real deep self-loathing, deep self-hatred. And everyone was like, oh yeah, but everyone like eats too much. And I was like, no, but there's something wrong with me. Like, I used to get suicidal if I went on diets. I get suicidal if I couldn't eat. It was just my whole entire world was what I was going to eat next, or how I can lose weight. That's all that went through my head all day, every day. There was very little room for anything else. And no one ever knew that. And like, no one ever knew. And I honestly didn't even know how much that affected me. I didn't know how deep my self-hatred and my self-loathing was, because I was toxic positivity. And until I started trying to have babies, and you know, my first time I got pregnant, I was binging and binging, and then I would run to try and run off how much I'd eaten, and then I'd lost the baby. And I was, you know, at that point, I was like, there's something I need to deal with this. There's, you know, I can't keep going this way. And that really kind of was the catalyst, sending me on an internal journey. I had listened to this guy, actually. I can't remember what his name was. Anyways, but he was the first person I ever heard make a mention to the correlation between our weight and eating disorders, or, you know, just having weight on and not being able to lose weight, and sexual abuse. And I remember listening to that and going, but I wasn't sexually abused, was I? Nah, I wasn't. I'd remember. But something just really hit with me, you know? And I was like, could all of this eating stuff be something deeper? And so that's when I really started kind of delving deeper into, you know, why I eat. And that was really hard. You know, like I started doing inner child work, actually.
Had you done any therapy prior to this?
No, nothing.
None.
No. And so I was so, you know, I was so disconnected from my body, so disconnected from my emotions, but I didn't even know any of that though. You know, I had no awareness of any of that. And to be honest, it was kind of only really when I started doing inner child work that, and I was given these exercises to, you know, look into my, write down my memories and stuff, that I really started kind of putting things together of, I don't have any memories. You know, I have massive chunks of my life that were non-existent. But I think from that space of just trying to connect with the little Alwyn that I was, that gave me enough strength to heal some of the wounds, if nothing else, even without the memories at that point.
What did that look like?
So essentially, I would just kind of every evening, I would try and write down anything that came to mind. And yeah, I just essentially got to this, you know, I remember someone saying to me about asking your inner child, or just listening for any song that comes up and seeing what that song means to you. And I thought it was batshit crazy. I was like, you know, who am I talking to? You know, like talking to an inner child in me. It just sounded bananas, but I was desperate for a baby. And so I said, fuck it, I'll give it a go. And I remember the song from Matilda came on. Do you remember Matilda?
Mm-hmm.
And I just was like, okay, what does that mean to me? And when I thought about Matilda, I just thought of loneliness, deep loneliness, always being on our own. And it really opened up something within me. I was like, it just really dawned on me that I really felt lonely my whole entire childhood, really deeply lonely. And at that point, I kind of was like, put it down to the fact that I was the youngest of six kids. And so maybe I just felt lost in the crowd. But it was really enough for me to kind of connect with that lonely part of me and try and just feel the love for her. And I remember a turning point coming, because I remember sitting in my sitting room one day, and my greatest fear was losing my husband. You know, that was my greatest fear. What I didn't know at the time was I decided when I met my husband, I was 19, and I was living at home previous to that. And that's where all my trauma and my abuse happened. And when I met my husband, I wasn't aware of it, but I made a decision right there and then that if I was gonna, you know, invest myself into this relationship, you know, if he ever broke up with me, I decided I would kill myself, because I was never going back to that house, you know? And so my ego, my whole entire body, my mind, my soul was like, we have to latch onto him so tightly, because if he breaks up with us, we're going to die. And so every time we'd have a fight, I would be crazy. You know, I would just lose it, psychotic. I would change from this calm, normal person into a raging psycho and wanting to kill myself, you know? And so I really recognized, you know, I got to the point where I was working with my inner child that, you know, I was like, I don't give a fuck if we lose Rob or if we lose my family or if we lose anyone. I don't give a shit about anyone anymore. As long as you are loved, as long as you know that you are worthy, if Rob can't deal with who we are at our core, not this happy, always happy, always pleasing everyone type of person, but who I was at my core, then I prefer he not be in my life. You know, I prefer anyone to not be in my life. I'm sick of feeling this way. And so it took for me to choose that little girl within me and really shifted the trajectory of my healing, because in choosing me, she really trusted that, okay, you know, I had her back and that no matter what happened, I wasn't going to kill myself, you know? And that was that really gave me the permission to, I guess, open up Pandora's box a little bit more.
So you mentioned before we started officially recording how the repressed memories came up for you and your sister.
Mm.
Was this something that you did together? Like this was something like it was like a joint experience, or you guys were kind of going through your own separate things, or what?
Yeah, it was pretty fascinating. We were going through our own separate things. My sister, you know, or both of our symptoms, very interestingly, were, you know, I would have been high functioning, you know, like very much had everything, like had my husband, I had my first baby at that point, just kind of well-rounded, got it together. No traumatic symptoms necessarily, like I didn't have nightmares. And my sister, she didn't know it at the time. She didn't know what it was called, but she would have night terrors every single night, her whole life. Like she was crippled with nightmares, night terrors, catastrophic.
Is she thinking. You said you're one of six. So is she then, she's the next one?
Yes.
The next youngest?
Yes. And so she always suffered. She suffered for such a long time, very much, I guess, on a more noticeable scale, you know? And so anyway, she'd been working on trying to deal with what these problems were. And she, you know, she said in the podcast, we did a podcast on our repressed memories coming up, and it's a whole like hour and a half on it. If anyone wants to go and get more details in case I miss something in this, that's the episode or story. But
I'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah. But so she was trying to get help in any way she could for the nightmares. And she was like, she remembered one person saying, you know, do you suffer from anxiety or anything? She's like, no, not at all. Just we have no awareness, really, you know. But anyway, she got to the point where she started researching MDMA. Do you know MDMA?
Mm-hmm.
They were doing it for the trials. So she started looking at MDMA. And she was
for
like,
depression, you know, or for trauma?
For trauma. Because she was looking at it being used for PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, I can't. I need help with this. I don't know how to do this. I wonder would it work, you know? And we're both of us are very much like at this point, trust whatever, trust the universe, trust that they'll bring it to us.
Mm-hmm.
And then both her and I never did drugs in our whole entire life. Like we were never into drugs. I drank, she didn't really. But she had said, you know what, okay, if I meant to do MDMA, well, it'll just come across my path and it'll feel right. And she said 2 weeks later, she was at a party, which she wouldn't normally go to parties or anything. She was at a party and a workmate had come up and said, oh, do you want some MDMA? And she was like, I don't want it now for partying, but I would like it for healing. And so that kind of started it. She did MDMA for the use of therapy, which if anyone isn't aware, the difference essentially is when you're in the intention, having the space, you're in a safe space, it has to be dark. And, you know, the intention is for healing. It actually creates a massively different response to when you actually use it for partying, you know? And so she did it that first time or I think it was the second time when she had done it, but she had remembered, she'd always had a memory of being brought to this place, this house, but she would always, the memory would cut off, you know? And so that memory completed and she remembered that abuse, you know? And, you know, it made a lot of sense and it was kind of, you know, it was a bit liberating in the sense that, okay, this, I understand now this is what's wrong, you know? And then at the same time, I was doing well. I was a health and life coach at that point myself, and I was doing good, but I was ended up being going on a cruise with my husband, and I was in a good space at this point, but I'd had a good few drinks, and I had this complete flip out. like where I was in the room telling him that I couldn't live anymore. I needed to kill myself. I needed to jump off the side of the boat, just out of nowhere, you know? And I had done so much work on myself at this point that I was like, there's something not right here. Like, I should not be this suicidal in this point in my life when I'm in this good a space, you know? There's something just not clicking. But packed it up anyways, and I said, I'll deal with it later. And my sister had said to me one of the days, I was looking at, you know, what direction I take my work. And she had said, you know what, like a lot of people are doing, you know, microdosing and using MDMA and stuff like that for, you know, getting that creative output. Why don't you try it? And I was like, no, hate drugs, can't deal it with it. I hate being out of control. But she was like, no, you know, it's different. So anyways, tried it. And I also had a memory come up. Again, it was a memory I had, but if it was, the memory would play, but then it would cut off and I didn't remember anything beyond that point. And so essentially I had the complete understanding and awareness come of that I was sexually abused, you know. The issue was that these were two different places. My sister was abused by some people. I was abused by other people, you know. And
did you have a, was it just an awareness or did you have like a flashback?
No, so it was more, so when I was lying in the bed, when I took the MDMA, what happened was I got the symptoms. I know it now to be PTSD. I always had these symptoms, but I didn't know what it was. I thought I was just insane. Like I thought I was, there was just something wrong with me. And if I told anyone, they would lock me in a mental asylum. But I had the symptoms of PTSD come on. And when I lay in the bed, I could feel someone on top of me. And they were, it was like they were abusing me. It was, you know, it was like I was reliving it in my body, but I didn't see the vision or the visual of it actually happening, you know. But I saw the, you know, the same thing. The memory replayed. And then I got all the sensations of essentially the abuse. And that was kind of the complete picture of it. And this, honestly, for me, it was, again, I felt liberated. I felt quite free in the fact that I was like, finally, I knew that there was something not right. Like I knew I didn't feel right in my body. I've always felt just there was something wrong. But what happened then was, you know, my sister and I just kind of started trying to heal that, heal each of our individual kind of memories of abuse. But for me, I just was like, there's something not right here. Like you were abused by these people. I was abused by someone else. And our family just, it wasn't clicking for me. There was something, there was a missing piece of the puzzle that wasn't slotting into place, you know? Mm-hmm. And so for the following year, the year after that, how my repressed memories kind of started to come up was in different ways, like dreams. Like I had always had dreams of kind of a sexual nature regarding my dad, and my sister did too. We just didn't talk about it. And just different things. Like I had a dream, a very specific dream one day, essentially just kind of where I stand up to my dad about the abuse. And the next day I was like, we were abused, dad abused us. That's it. I know that this happened, but my sister wasn't able to take it in. And so she was like, you know, it might have been just a dream or whatever. And I was like, just, I feel like this really happened. So I buried it. And then she was up at work. And essentially she just got kind of lots of like flashbacks and memories and stuff. And she came down and she was like, yeah, dad abused us, you know. And so at that point, then both of us were very much aware, okay, this happened. Dad abused us. But what the fuck is with the other people? You know, what's with the other people that abuse us? Like, could we be that unlucky? You know? And both of us decided then we're going to do MDMA again together. So we hadn't done it since that first time. And this was a year later. And we said we were going to do the MDMA together and just really try and have that intention of figuring out what the fuck happened, you know? And I, yeah, that was, and in that MDMA session, I remembered being there, my dad being paid money for us to be taken away, sexually abused. And from there on, then I just, myself and my sister just had, I had a pretty much psychotic break. I had two young kids at the time, a 1 year old and a 3 year old. And it was just too much. It was really, what I recognize now is, you know, the way that my consciousness showed me was like, it was like two buses, the past self, the part of me that I buried with all the trauma and the abuse and everything, and the current self, the going on with everyday life self, both just came crashing into each other. And it just showed me like all of my like my circuits in my brain just started to hardwire, just started to fucking snap, because I couldn't, I had always existed with one part of me to the front. So it was either me talking to you right now, the adult self, the going on everyday life self, the self who didn't have any conscious awareness of what happened to me in the past, or it was the traumatized child self that was at the front. But both of them parts never met. So during the day, I was the going on with everyday life self. That part wasn't aware of the other part of me that was being abused at nighttime. You know, that kind of way. And those two parts could not meet because of what happened to me. That psychotic break that I had was the result of these two parts and their conflicting realities literally just coming like two fucking trains crashing into each other and exploding.
When was this?
So that was January of 2020, I think.
Wow.
Yeah.
What was it like going through this with your sister?
Oh, you know what? I wouldn't have survived if I didn't have my sister. I would not have survived, because I really struggled to believe it. Like, I was like, I can't believe it. I can't. This can't have happened. I was just really struggling with it all. And she was the one that was able to be like, Alwyn, this happened. You know, I'm here with you. We're going to deal with it. We had both very different coping mechanisms. My coping mechanism was the person who's lit on fire and everyone wants to put her out. Whereas my sister was the coping mechanism of just literally dead on the outside. Looks like it didn't affect her at all. Whereas inside, she was like falling into this abyss, deep hole that no one ever saw, you know? And so everyone thought that she was doing really well. And I was the one that was struggling. Whereas in actual fact, she was struggling just as much as me, but we just had different coping mechanisms, different trauma symptoms, you know? But having her, honestly, like discussing it, like I have four siblings, four brothers, and they couldn't believe it, which I completely understand. You know, I really do understand that. Like, you know, my dad is like pillar of society, nicest person you'll ever meet, you know, that type of person that would never do anything to harm a snail kind of person, the typical pedophiles. And they couldn't accept it, which is understandable, but it was really hard. It was really hard to not have them accept it. And they wanted to, like, they really tried. Like, they really gave us the space to try and understand it. You know, I don't hold it against my brothers at all, but, you know, I love my brothers and I really just wanted them. So honestly, I probably would have buried it all. And I would have just said, oh, it must have been some slip of a psychotic fucking episode. Never happened, because I would have wanted my brothers in my life, you know. But having Jackie there, we were able to kind of anchor each other. And if one of us kind of had those times where we just couldn't believe it, or where we were like, I just can't do this, the other one was strong. We were strong for each other, you know. And I really, like, my heart goes out to anyone who doesn't have someone, because to do it on your own is fucking torture.
What did you remember about your childhood? Like, prior to that, like, how would you have described it to somebody?
This is the funniest part, because, and it's not funny, but it's amazing more so how we adapt and create narratives and stories to survive. Me and my sister, our narrative was, we had a great childhood, really happy, loving parents. Yeah, it was just, we were like the Waltons. That was the sentence, and that was what we told everyone, you know. And you know what the reality is we believed that. We believed that because we had to believe it. We had to believe that that was the truth, because believing anything else was impossible. It was just too painful. And so what I remembered, the way I kind of, when I talk to people now about suppressed memories and about abuse, the way that I discuss it now is I say to people, go through your life and look at, you know, your years, like try and indicate how many years of memory do you have. Do you remember your first class? Do you remember school? Do you remember home? Do you remember your bedroom? Do you remember your aunt's house? Do you remember your uncle's house? Do you remember your friends that you had? You know, so going through all of these things, go through the years. How many years do you have? Do you have memories from all of your years? And if you have years where there's blanks, that's a concern. And not necessarily that there's sexual abuse or anything like that, but there was definitely some type of traumatic event that caused you to pack it up and store it in the subconscious. And for me, when I started to look at the years, I remember like maybe 2 days in my sixth class when I was about 11. I remembered being outside my house. Didn't really necessarily remember my bedroom too much. You know, I didn't really remember secondary school. Didn't remember friends. Like, and this is when you get into it, right? When you really start unpacking it, it's pretty scary, because I actually talked to an old friend of mine one day, you know, this is the thing. I would avoid everyone from my past. I would avoid all the friends that I used to have, because I felt like they knew more about me than I knew about me. And so when I started healing, I kind of got the courage to ask an old friend of mine. I said, I hope you don't mind, but I'd love you to help me. I know that we were friends, but I don't know how friendly were we. I want to know how bad my memory is or how much I blocked out. And I was like, I remember your mom, and I remember the street that your house was on. And I remember we were friends, but I don't know how close we were. She wrote back an email. She was like, you used to come to my house nearly every day. We walked to school every day together. We sat beside each other, and we used to play this game where we would pretend like our pencils were people. And we did kickboxing together for 2 years. I had no recollection of any of it. And so but I had no awareness that I had no recollection. So what happens is, and the same with my husband, because, you know, when I was starting, my husband was starting this work with me, or after I started the work, my husband started healing as well. And he said, yeah, but I've lots of memories. And I was like, okay, tell me them. So what happens is we pick out some highlight reels, and we'll keep on replaying the highlight reels again and again to show ourselves that we've lots of memories. But when you actually unpack them and try and actually look at how much memory you have from your childhood, you know, do you remember your parents ever getting angry, sad, any emotions? A lot of the time we'd be like, no, my mom was happy all the time. No mom is ever happy all the time, you know, or there's always blocks. There's always, if you had a childhood that was balanced, you're going to be able to remember the ups and downs of childhoods, not just the highlight reel of everything that was good.
Mm-hmm. It's crazy how the mind works.
It is fascinating. And I love it. Like, it's been 3 years now. Like, what are we in? 2023. 3 years since the depths of the memories came up for me. And I'm telling you, like, surviving that was fucking an impossible task, you know? But what I'll say is I learned so much about everything. I learned so much about the consciousness, about emotional regulation, about trauma, about repressed memories. And I learned it all myself, not from books necessarily. I do read a lot of books and stuff and I listen to podcasts, but most of the what I learned was through walking through hell myself, mm-hmm. you know, really understanding from the deepest level what was going on with me, why my brain had to do what it had to do, why the parts of me exist the way that they exist, and learning how to just navigate life again beyond the depths of trauma and shame. And I guess the biggest thing for me, honestly, was, you know, the kids, obviously, because my kids were the reason why I stayed around. Like, you know, if it wasn't for them, I don't think I would have been able to stay going through that pain, because yeah, it was really, really dark place. And I think what I'd love to say mainly is I think it was the darkest place for me because the person I was most afraid of wasn't anyone outside of me. Mm-hmm. The person I was most afraid of was the person, the monster within me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was so terrified of all of these parts of me that were just taking over my body. All of these wounded children, all of these abused parts of me would hijack me, you know? Like, I would go from being a normal adult functioning in this everyday life in 2020 to being a child who there's an abuser there. Even though there's no one there, I would just, my body would react and I would literally be, my sister used to call it manic. Like she said, I used to come in and I was just manic, running around the place. Like it was as if there was someone running after me. I was mental. I was insane. And that was my greatest fear, was that I was insane. And here I was, typically, essentially insane, but I wasn't. I was just trying to navigate the depths of the pain that was resurfacing in my body. And I had no tools or no capacity to do that, to work with that, to navigate that in a safe way.
So talk about some pivotal moments in your healing.
All right, Chicho. So if you're like me and you care about your skin, you want to have nice looking skin, perhaps you have sensitive skin, but you don't want to fuss with or have the time for a 7-step skincare routine, then this one is for you. Le Pur Naturals Beef Tallow Face Cream, which I have been using for the past few months, and my skin has been thanking me. So this face cream is gentle, simple, and effective, made with real natural ingredients you can actually pronounce. No synthetic fillers, no chemicals you can't identify, just nutrient-rich beef tallow, pure essential oils, and beneficial ingredients like raw honey and vitamin E. It's one jar, one step, and you're done. Totally shit show proof. Perfect for anyone who wants healthy skin without the hassle. So if you're ready to unlock your natural glow and discover the power of nature's original skincare, then head on over to lepurenaturals.com/adultchild for 40% off. That is Lepure, L-A-P-U-R-E, naturals.com/adultchild for 40% off. Go get this great deal. Your face wants this. Your face needs this. All right, shit show ladies. Have you ever had those days where everything just feels so much damn harder than normal and you can't figure out why? I already know the answer to that question is yes. And boy, have I definitely had more than my fair share of those days and totally get just how frustrating this can be. But recently, I've learned that sometimes it's not just stress, lack of sleep, a dysregulated nervous system. It could also be my hormones at play. And that is where Happy Mammoth comes in. They offer a free 2-minute quiz that can help you uncover the root cause of your hormonal symptoms. It's super easy. Any shit show can do it. Just answer a few questions about what you've been going through and where you're at in life. After taking this quiz, you'll get personalized recommendations to help balance your hormones and start feeling better. So I took this hormone quiz myself. The quiz suggested that my body may be overloaded with estrogen, which is affecting me in all kinds of ways. And one of the recommendations that I got was to start taking Hormone Harmony, which helps with bloating, chronic fatigue, weight gain, mood swings, and more. And after adding it to my routine, I've definitely noticed a difference. Now, taking care of your hormones isn't just about feeling good right now. It's also about investing in our healing journey. And so by taking this quiz, you'll learn more about your hormone balance, which will allow you to start making small, intentional changes to support you on this healing journey. Whether it's the Hormone Harmony or another Happy Mammoth product, the quiz helps guide you towards solutions that work specifically for you. So if you're ready to start feeling like yourself again, head over to happymammoth.com and take their free 2-minute hormone quiz today to find out the ultimate answer to your stubborn hormonal issues. And for a limited time, you can also get 15% off your entire first order with my code adultchild at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code adultchild for 15% off today.
Let's see. It's amazing because like I can feel my body shaking, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I have to ground myself a bit. My parts are, you know, they're finding walking down memory lane a little bit hard today, but that's okay. You know, it's never easy, these things. But I feel like always healing.
Mm-hmm.
Pivotal moments. First pivotal moment, I would say, would be I was in the trampoline with my two sons and I felt completely dead inside. And I just thought to myself, I was like, I can't do this. I have to kill myself. I have to do it. I can't do this. I can't be a mother to these kids. And I'm afraid that I'm going to hurt them. And so I was like, I have to kill myself. But do you know when people are put into your life for a reason? I had a client 2 years earlier and her mom had killed herself. And I remember in that moment in the trampoline, I remember that girl across from me and how brokenhearted she was that her mother killed herself. She could have dealt with anything if her mom just stayed around, you know? And so I remembered that in that moment in the trampoline and I was like, no, I make a decision right here, right now, that no matter how hard this gets, that I will not kill myself. I will continue on, even if I'm the worst fucking mother in the world. And even if I'm crawling through every single day, depressed and angry and in pain, I will do it. With every single day being an intention that I would be a better mom today than I was yesterday. And I can't give them anything more than that. You know, it's all I have to give. And even though I know that this will probably get worse, I'm going to choose that now, you know, before it gets worse. And I'm telling you, it got a lot worse after that. And I had to, that promise that I made became my anchor, because in those times where I was like, I just saw how much my boys were hurting, and it's so much easier to logically kind of, you know, make that conclusion that they'd be better off without you, you know, that everyone would be better off without the suffering that I brought into the house, that I was bringing into every single day that we existed. But because of that promise I made myself, it gave me the strength and the courage to really recognize that, you know, it's not an option anymore. Out is not an option. Another pivotal moment for me was a really important thing for me and for every single person that's healing, whether that's relationships or being a mother or father, whatever that may be. I realized that there was moments when I was a fucking monster, when I could see the fear and the terror in my kids' eyes. And I was not the mom that I wanted to be, not the person that I wanted to be. And I remember doing something, I don't know whether I would just get aggressive with my son, and I could see how afraid he was. Mm-hmm. And I remember wanting to shame myself. You're fucking shit. You're nothing. You're worthless. You're scum. And the pivotal moment came when I recognized that that's what creates the monster within me. It's the little child within me. The part of me is wounded. She doesn't want to hurt my kids. She's just in pain. And so the pivotal moment for me became when I realized that the only way to heal was to love myself at my worst, even if that worst is pretty shit. But the more that I could love myself in the moments when I was at my absolute worst, when I deserved forgiveness the least, was when I needed to give it to myself the most. When I deserved compassion the least was the time I needed to love myself the most. And they became the most healing moments in my healing journey. The times when I fucked up the most became the most pivotal moments, because in finding the ability to hold and love that part of me that really was just hurting, I didn't want to hurt my kids. Never. No one wants to hurt their kids. No one wants to hurt anyone. All we are is wounded. Each of us are just wounded, replaying some trauma that was in the past in this present moment. And in that moment, my kids were my abusers. It's not my fault that I saw them as my abusers, you know, but it was that reactivity. So the pivotal moment was, the more that I wanted to hate myself and shame myself became the moments that I chose to love myself. And they really became catapults for my healing, and the most transformative moments. Other pivotal moments, choosing me. So that, again, my husband, my trauma became a mirror for my husband's trauma. And he began to project his anger and his helplessness onto me, you know, because I was reflecting a lot of things that he didn't want to recognize or acknowledge within himself. And I could have seen it and continued to see myself as, well, I'm fucked up. No wonder he's, you know, angry at me. I'm a waster. I'm a loser. I'm broken, you know. But I recognized and I realized that I couldn't heal if I was literally drowning and he was pouring more water on top of me. You know, I needed to survive. I needed to get through for the kids, and he wasn't helping. And so choosing me. And in that, I mean, saying to him that, you know, I recognize that I don't know what's going on with you, but I know you're struggling, and I can't keep on being your emotional punch bag. I'm struggling to keep my head afloat, and I love you so much. But if you can't work on you and take responsibility for your healing, then we have to separate. Like, we can't keep doing this. And I can't see you self-destruct, because at that point I could see he was starting to self-destruct, and it was just too much. I couldn't do that. And, you know, I'm really grateful, because we could have continued on in that relationship of toxicity where he wasn't taking responsibility for his shit and we were blaming all of the stuff on my trauma, because that would have been easy. I just had so much fucking memories of abuse come up. It would be easy to see myself as the problem in all of this. But I just was able to recognize that, no, I deserve better than this. I deserve better than someone putting their stuff on top of me when I'm already trying to swim and kick my feet as hard as possible to keep my head above water. And that was the greatest thing ever, because, you know, I understood that my husband, he could have easily just turned around, walked away and said, she's a basket case. You know, I can't live with that. He could have easily done it. Many people would have done that because I was a wreck. But he used it as an opportunity to say, okay, maybe there is something that I need to heal. Maybe I need to do this. And so he then also did MDMA, which my husband now, he wouldn't even drink caffeine. He's that healthy. No caffeine, no drugs, no cigarettes. He was like, the idea of doing MDMA, it was just unbelievable. But he wouldn't see a psychologist, pure man, typical. And so he said, okay, I'll do the MDMA. I was shocked. And he did that, and that literally just sprung him open. He realized how much grief and how much pain he had inside of him. And that started him on his healing journey. And now, fuck, he's amazing. Like, he's my inspiration. Like, the way that he's dealt with every bit of trauma, he's literally just faced it, dove into it. And he just reflects on everything. Even in parenting now, you know, he is now looking at how he wants to be as a father and how he doesn't want to pass his generational wounds onto our kids. And that's all from me choosing to stand up for me. I didn't try and change him. I had no interest in changing him because I can't get someone else outside of me to change. I can only say what I deserve, what I'm willing to take, and hope that they have the strength and the courage to do what they need to do for us to move forward together. And thankfully for my husband and for me, he did that because we're closer now than we could ever have been. And that's thanks to this healing journey.
That's beautiful. I want to circle back to what you were saying about like loving yourself in those moments when you needed it the most. How were you able to cultivate that? What did that look like?
So, okay. So example, right? I would be triggered by something. And when I would get triggered, you know, I know we talked about it in the mm-hmm. podcast that I did. Mm-hmm. When I would get triggered, I wouldn't be in control of my body. So I would essentially kind of be in the back. It was like I was in the back of my consciousness mm-hmm. and I was watching this person just lose it. Like, she was angry and she was aggressive, and I was trying to tell her to stop. Like, I was trying to tell myself, he's only a child. He's not your abuser. Stop, stop, mm-hmm. stop. I just couldn't. I mm-hmm. couldn't stop my hand. I couldn't stop myself. And that's where the fear came in, obviously, that this monster needs to be caged and whatever. So I would do that. I would terrify him for whatever would happen. And so what would happen then is I would have all the grief, all the shame, all the disgust, kind of when I would wake up. You know, you wake up after you do something really shameful. It's like you're like, what the fuck did I do? Or, you know, how did I do that or whatever? And so I would kind of nearly come to, the trigger would pass and I would be flooded with shame and disgust and self-hatred of what I had just done. And so what I would do in that moment would be, okay, Alwyn, we're going to just deal with this. It's going to be okay. So I would first of all go to my son and I would say, I'm really sorry, darling. I'm really sorry. I know that I scared you and I'm really working hard on healing the pain in my heart, but sometimes the pain comes out in anger and I take that anger out on you. It's not your fault. So firstly, I'll always repair my son and just try and help him understand that this is nothing to do with him, everything to do with me. And then I would literally just kind of come into a space, I would go into my room or whatever. And when I would feel all of the thoughts, you're disgusting, you're shit, you're nothing, you should die, I would talk back to the thoughts and say, I'm going to love you anyways. You're just hurting. You didn't mean to hurt him. This isn't your fault. I'm sorry that you did that. And I know that it's not great. And I don't want to be hurting him either. But you are hurting. You didn't want to do this. So essentially, it's kind of just seeing the best in myself. When I so desperately want to see the worst in myself, when I so desperately want to just go into that hole. Because the main thing actually that I recognize and I realized was when I would go into my room and shame myself and hate myself, what would happen is I would shut my son out. I would block him out. So he already had the traumatic event happen where I would lose my shit with him. Then I would actually make him suffer more because of the shame that I was feeling. I would lock myself down. And by locking myself down, I would lock him out. And he would feel even more abandoned and rejected. I thought I was doing a great thing by you know, whipping myself, shaming myself. I'll make myself better by shaming myself. I'll make myself be a better mother by whipping myself, by telling myself how shit I am, so I'll do it better next time. But I recognize that that never works. Mm-hmm. All that does is put myself deeper in a hole. Mm-hmm. So every time that I did that, I would say, I'm not going to close my heart. I'm not going to lock myself down. I'm going to feel this pain. And generally, you know, when I would say that to this part of me, I love you. You didn't mean to hurt him. It's not your fault. You're just in pain. I would just wail. I would feel emotions that I couldn't access in any therapy session. You know, those moments of failure where I lost it the most became the moments of most healing, because when I could find that love and compassion for these parts of me that were so unlovable, so shit, so shameful, that would literally break me down to just grieve so intensely, so much pain. And it also meant I actually kept my heart open to my son, that I wasn't closing myself off thinking that that's the best way to keep him safe. No, the best way is to forgive myself, love myself, so that we can be a better version of ourselves tomorrow. And also, the other thing that I say to my clients and I say in the group and everything all the time, shit things are going to happen. We're going to fuck up. But you know what? Use it. Make the most of the fuck ups. Mm-hmm. Because every time we fuck up, right? If we decide to shame ourselves for it, we're not learning anything from it. We're not healing from it. We're not going to be any better the next time that our kid does that exact same thing. So if you're going to fuck up and you're going to do something that you seriously regret, at least make it count. And what I mean is, you know, if you shout at your child and say that you hate her and she's disgusting and she's worthless or whatever, obviously that's pretty intense, but if you tell your child that you hate her, you know, it's done. The damage is done. But use it. Use the grief, the pain. Use whatever it is that is coming up in you to let it all out, to use it as an anchor point. Like the way I see it is like watching a sad movie. Anchor in that sadness. Allow yourself to grieve it. Get it out of you, you know. So just feel it. Like I would actually replay the event in my head again and again and again and again until all of the pain was bled out of me, until all of the tears dried up, until all of the screaming stopped. I would keep on repeating it, not to punish myself, but to help myself feel the pain and let that out.
Mm. Other than correction in the moment, like talking to your son and letting him know that it's not about him, have there been like subsequent, I mean, obviously they're so young. So have there been subsequent, I mean, obviously it's just like moving forward and, you know, being the best mom that you can be to show up, but it's, have there been any conversations other than that, like when it's not been in the moment?
Oh yeah. We talk about it all the time. You know, like you know, for me, it's really interesting because the boys had a really difficult time with me. Like it was really traumatic. Mm-hmm. And it was more traumatic. I don't believe nearly necessarily that my actions were as traumatic as the inconsistency of my parenting.
Mm-hmm.
I was I think the most terrifying thing for children
is to never know what they're going to get.
Exactly. That's the most terrifying part. And so it was the inconsistency that they got. Is mom going to be angry at me today for spilling the milk, or is she going to be the nice mom? You know, the same way with me, like there was a good mom and there was a bad mom. They had a good mom and a bad mom. And so they couldn't live. They couldn't feel safe to play or enjoy themselves or let their nervous system relax because they were constantly in a hypervigilant state, wondering what state is mom in at this moment? What's going to tip her over the edge, you know? Mm-hmm. And when you're in that trauma response, anything can tip her over the edge. It's very inconsistent. It's very painful for children, you know? And so, you know, for me, there's lots of things. The main thing that I focus on for myself, and I focus on teaching and spreading the message, is focus less on your kids, focus only on you, because my kids had a lot of like behavioral issues initially, my oldest son. And that's kind of a part of the healing for me was I was trying to get him help. I was like, there's something wrong with him. Like there's something wrong with he's like his reactions. And he's just really like, I was like, does he have oppositional defiance disorder? Yada, yada. But what I recognized was when we as adults and when we as parents begin to heal the trauma within us, it creates that ripple effect. And so all I began to do was I really stopped taking all of the attention off the kids. You know, I literally did not focus on them at all. I was like, this is all about me. I put all of the money into me, all of the, you know, I didn't buy them clothes. I bought all of my money was into my healing, my psychology, everything that I needed to do to be a better version of me for them. Because what happened was, as time went on and I became safer within my own body, became more healed, they then felt safer to open up and deal with the pain that they had stored as a child during those traumatic events with me. So kids, I don't believe, need as much external therapy as they do just a safe, loving, present parent. Mm. And so the more that I healed the pain and the wounds and the sadness and the grief within me, the more that I became a safe mom. And also I would communicate that to them. So I would talk about, you know, I would talk even in times when I wasn't triggered. You know, I'd say sometimes, you know, I would talk also sometimes about my childhood. I would say, you know, I had a really sad childhood, you know, like I was really sad and bad things happened. And I've got a really sad heart. And when people have sad hearts, sometimes they get really angry. And sometimes they take that anger out on people around them. And so sometimes I took my anger out on you. And honestly, the things that my kids have said over the years is amazing. Just random observations, you know. Like one time my son had said, he had said something about like, you know, something about the two mommies. You know, he was like, I like it when you're here, mommy, but I don't like it when the other mommy's here, the one that gets angry. But he was able to distinguish that there was two. And so, you know, in those moments, again, teachable moments. And I was like, I know that you're afraid of the angry mommy. And I'm really working with her so that she feels safe. But she just has a sad heart and it's not your fault. So it's very much about all those conversations and about when they have sad hearts and when they're angry, really just consistently opening up the conversations about emotions, about how we're feeling, about everything that we're experiencing in each and every moment. That's really it. But the one thing I was going to say is, you know, they've had a really tough time with me, but I'm delighted. They're amazing kids. Mm-hmm. You know, the resilience and the emotional regulation and the emotional awareness and the capacity to see in others their pain and their happiness, they're so much more aware as children than other children would be, because they've seen me fall apart. They've had those conversations. We've had those conversations. We talk about it. And so I feel like they've such a more a greater wide capacity to recognize their own pain and their own sadness and find resolution to that, because we've had those opportunities to talk about it and discuss it. And also them as siblings, because initially, like when I was going through the worst part of my trauma, you know, they fought all of the time. They fought constantly. And what I recognized, it was because they didn't feel safe. They didn't feel safe with me. And so they couldn't take their anger out on me because I was so unstable. And so they fought each other. They took the anger out on each other in order to try and get rid of that nervous energy, you know. And once I started to become safer and hold space for them, they were able to build so much more beautiful and safer bonds between them, you know. So I feel like ultimately, everything just is a ripple effect from us as parents doing the work. And as I said in the podcast with Janet Lansbury, the first podcast I did, you know, I really hated my son, like my oldest. Like, I just had this visceral hate for him. And I was like, I can't say that. Like, moms don't hate their kids. Like, that's really bad, you know? And I felt such shame over it. And I wanted to love him so badly, but there was just this, the stronger part of me just hated him, hated his behaviors, hated all of it. And I came to that awareness one day when I was looking at him, that it wasn't him that I hated. It was me, you know? I hated everything I saw in him, his innocence, his vulnerability, his anger. All I was looking at, I wasn't even seeing my son. I was seeing me. I was seeing me as a little girl, and I fucking hated her. I hated her for her vulnerability. I hated her for her helplessness. I hated her for being abused. You know, it's all her fault. If she just was better, if she was more lovable, then no one would have done all these bad things to her, you know? And so it wasn't that I couldn't love my beautiful son. It was I couldn't love myself. And so that is, you know, they say you can't love another person until you love yourself. And I know some people think that that's not relevant, but I really do feel like, especially when you've got kids, if they mirror the parts of you that you hate, you can't love in them what you can't love within yourself.
Did you feel, because I, you know, I feel, as I've said to you before, like as a mother, you know, I think that you're owning up and saying things that most would be way too ashamed to say. And did you feel like that? Did you have a moment where you're like, you feel like that's part of your calling, that like you need to be a voice to this?
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's funny, I'm getting very emotional now, actually. The hardest part of my healing, fucking hardest part, was I remember sitting outside and I remember thinking, I'm too afraid to get help because I'm afraid they're going to shame me. Mm-hmm. They're going to take my kids away from me. Mm-hmm. And I'm too afraid not to get help in case I kill them or in case I hurt them badly. Obviously, I mean, kill. I was never at that point. Well, fuck it, I hope not. But I mean, like, you know, I was afraid that I was really going to harm them really badly. Mm-hmm. You know, I did really consider killing all of us in the car driving into a wall, you know. And it was in those moments. I remember one moment specifically, I guess you were talking about those pivotal moments. And I remember being outside and thinking, I'm too afraid to get help. I'm too afraid to tell anyone what I'm experiencing. And I'm too afraid not to, you know. And I recognized, because of all the work I had done on myself prior to that, you know, I'd become a health and life coach at that point. I realized in that moment, this isn't fair. This isn't good. I can't be the only mom who's experiencing this. And if I can just share my message and share how painful this was and all of the shame that I felt and all of the fear that I thought my kids would be taken away from me, if I can share that and help other moms see that they're not alone and that there's only a wounded little child within them and that don't be afraid to get help, you know, then it'll be worth it, you know. So definitely, it definitely was a part of my calling and is a part of my calling for sure. And that's really, you know, you say, you have people that are not judgmental, but I feel like they say that they're not judgmental. And I give this example, okay? So we went camping, me and the boys and a group of people. And there was this family behind us camping. And the child was crying a lot and shouting a lot and just quite, you know, dysregulated, you know? And during the night, the whole campsite was quiet and this kid was crying a lot. And eventually you could hear the mom and she was screaming at her. And eventually you heard this real smack, you know, real loud smack. Mm. And the whole place could hear it. It was so quiet, you know. And the next day I got up and in my group, I was the only one with kids. And they were all of them were kind of whispering. I could see the whole campsite was whispering about this family, you know, all speculating what happened. And one of the girls had come up to me in our group and was like, you know, how do you feel about it? Like, you have kids. And I was like, I feel really fucking sad. I feel sad because this woman and her child, they're obviously struggling, yet all ye can do is judge her. That's all. None of you have fucking even thought about what might be happening. You've all, you know, assumed I was her once. No one came to help me. Everyone judged me from the sidelines about everything I was doing wrong. And I was trying my best to heal. And so I decided I was going to go up to the mom. And so I went over to her when everyone was avoiding her. I went over to her and I said, hey, you know, I've heard, I could hear your little daughter scream, whatever. And she was like, yeah, she said, like, she's, you know, she's, and you know, this family, like, I guess you would have classed them as maybe lower class, you know, like, mm-hmm. they, but not, you know, not in, not in any trash.
Not in like just, a severe way. Yeah.
Yeah. And I just said to her, you know, like, I could see your daughter was really struggling, and I could see she was like on the defensive, you know, like, who are you? You're just picking your nose
mm-hmm.
in.
Mm-hmm.
And I was aware of that. I was aware that she might reject me, you know, if I went over. And she had said that her daughter, like, she might be just having like some heat rash or something because she just wouldn't stop screaming. And she got some, you know, so dysregulated. She didn't say dysregulated, but she just couldn't cope with it. And so I said to her, I was like, you know what? When my boys, when we go away, first of all, the first night is always difficult. The kids are out of their routine. It's really hard. What I do is I put the boys in the car, drive them around, put on the aircon, and put some music on. Usually they fall asleep and I'll put them back into the tent or whatever. And I had thought about that the night before going, why is she not bringing them in the car? And she had said to me, oh, okay. I didn't think about that, that I might try that, whatever. And I just said to her, I was like, you know what? Like, you know, it's really hard when you're in a new place and your child is like screaming. I know that must be really tough on you. I just want you to know I'm next door. So if you need anything at all, just come and get me. I'm here anytime, whatever. And, you know, this is the problem, because a lot of people would say you're condoning her and her behavior by going over and showing compassion to someone who's abusing her child, right? But what I say is, when everyone was judging that woman, what was happening? Her inner child was freaking out, feeling more judged. When her inner child was feeling more judged, what was happening? She was getting more reactive and more angry with her mm-hmm. child. Mm-hmm. So the children suffer more when we judge from afar, when we don't show compassion. And anyways, later on, she came over to me and she was like teary. And she had said to me, I just want to say to you, thank you so much. She said, my husband, I talked to my husband about what you said. And we brought the kids for a drive in the car and they fell asleep. And she said, they feel so safe in their car seats that they've stayed in there. And it's been an extra hour just talking to each other. And she was like, I just really was struggling last night. And I had so much like anger come up and everything. And I took that opportunity to say, you know, we get really triggered by our kids. I get triggered all the time. But one of the things that I do is I work on my own triggers, my own regulation, because honestly, that's generally what tips us over the edge. We're already at here. And then we fucking, something tips us over the edge. Something becomes even more heightened. And we just end up screaming and becoming the moms that we don't want to become. We've all been there. But just that's one of the things that I do is I just really try and monitor how I'm doing. Am I meeting my own needs? And it was just such a beautiful moment, because that child was so much happier the rest of that weekend, because her mom was able to show up for her by having someone see the best in her rather than seeing the worst in her, you know. And I put it up in the group and I had asked all of the people in the group, what would you have done? Honestly, what would you have done? And most of them had said that they would have just judged. They would have mm-hmm. just been like, oh, she's a bad parent, she's a bad mother. And I just was really trying to point this out, that by judging other moms, by judging people, all it does is create more pain and more suffering for their children. The more that we can try and bridge the gap and just have curiosity, have compassion, open up our hearts a little bit, that woman then got to have that ability to have a conversation with me about something that she might have been aware about, that kids trigger us and that we have to work on ourselves and our needs in order to be the parents that we need to be. And who knows what that could have happened? You know, who knows what could have happened beyond that point? But I really feel like, I feel like the judgments, we're so quick to judge other people and other parents. And from someone who was trying so hard to be, in inverted commas, a good parent, but mm-hmm. who felt like I was, sometimes when I was out there, I was a raging psycho.
In inverted commas. I love that.
Yeah. Like,
is that what you guys, because we say, I've never heard that before. We go quote, like in quotes.
Oh, really?
I've never heard that before.
I always say in inverted commas.
In inverted commas. No, we say, like, do you not call it like quotation marks?
Yeah, I've never said quotation marks, but I guess that's right as well.
Yeah, no, I'm into it. Yeah. Inverted. I like that.
Yeah. But, So I think, you know, I guess that's the point I'm making is, in my group, the whole reason mm-hmm. I created the group was people put up there, they put up things that generally people would shame them for, or mm-hmm. generally, you know, either, or else they might put up something about their partner that mm-hmm. everyone gets on this hate bandwagon of fuck him, leave mm-hmm. him. Mm-hmm. But I always bring it back to us as individuals. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, he could be an asshole, but I don't give a shit about him. I give mm-hmm. a shit about you. I give a shit about you and your inner child. Your kids could be fucking psychomaniacs, but I don't give a shit about your kids. I give a shit about you. How are you doing? How are you feeling? How are you showing up? Are you taking care of you? Because the more that we focus on everyone outside of us, the less then that we actually do what's really the most important part, which is tune into what it is that we are experiencing, what we're feeling, deal with us first. And then only from that space that we can really make the decisions and the choices that we need to make to create the life that we really want to live. And shaming people and shaming each other just doesn't work.
No, it sure damn doesn't. I was thinking too, when you were talking about the inconsistency and like the two moms, and just thinking about that with myself, with my mom, 85% of the time, she was like the best mom in the whole world, you know? And then when she was drunk, she was unavailable to me. Just thinking about how that has impacted, just especially romantic relationships with like, it's like that hypervigilance, right? Of just like, my big fear is just like someone overnight without any sort of warning is going to like abandon me, right? Or like decide like they don't like me anymore. And the other thing too, I was thinking about how that was reiterated when I was in the first grade. I had this one friend, her name was Courtney. And I remember like every day I'd walk into school and I never knew if today was going to be a day where she was going to be my friend, or if today was going to be a day where she would be so mean to me that I would get into the car at the end of the day, like hysterically crying. And like, we would even have like play dates after school. And then the next day she would just like treat me like shit. And I just think about, and I don't know if it's normal or not, like for like a 6 or 7 year old, like if somebody's treating you like that, is it normal? Cause for me, it was just like, I'll take what I can get. You know, like, it's like, I don't know if like a healthy child would be like, well, screw this. I'm not going to like, I never know if they're going to be my friend or not. There's other people for me to be, you know, other kids for me to play with. But yeah, God.
It sounds just like that, the familiarity of it. That's familiar uh-huh. to you. Having someone be on and off, that's familiar. You know, that's, whereas, as you said, a healthy child who understands what connection really is would be able to discern, this doesn't feel good in my body. This doesn't feel right to me. And so, no, you're not the person for mm-hmm. me, you know? But an interesting actually thing about that is, you know, I notice that my son, he loves kids. He loves boys. He loves other boys who are wild. He loves the wilder they are, the crazier they are, the more he wants to be their friend, you know? And my sister was a bit concerned, you know? She was like, Alwyn, like, you know, he's so calm and he's so quiet, whatever. And she's like, what is it he's looking for in them? And I was like, do you know what? I feel like maybe he feels like he has to be too good all the time. And he wants to be a bit more like them, a bit more free, a bit more wild. And he's associating with them to try and, you know, see what it would feel like to try out that wildness, to try out that crazy hyper, you know, because they're very hyperactive, you know. And, you know, I think that there's so much that we can learn from that. And for me, I was like, you know what? I'm happy for him to go with that. Let him experiment with it. Let him go wild. Let him see how it feels in his body. And he can discern whether that's for him or not. But I think that that's where healthy children are able to discern what's good for them, what's not good for them. But whereas you're saying there, you know, when you meet the girl and she's one day she's one way, another day she's another way, you know, that is very much like, that is familiar. It's like that give, that take, that show up, don't show up. It's that inconsistency, as you said, you know.
Do you want to talk a little bit about your community?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Like, I don't really feel like it's, you know, I, you know what? I'm one of these people, I just feel like a lone wolf. Even though I've lots of people around me, I always just feel like I'm there just kind of putting my soul out there. You know, I utilized with the group, essentially, it was really about me just sharing everything, all of my pain, all of the things that people normally don't share, I would share, you know, shameful moments, embarrassing moments. And I wanted people to understand that the greatest healing comes when they can, you know, face the shame. You know, shame only exists in the darkness. And so if you can, you know, say the things that you're ashamed about, you'll get the most healing from that. And so the group essentially has just been about me sharing all of my pain. And it kind of then just became a place where other people felt safer to share theirs. And I generally, where possible, will comment. Like, I'll generally really try and get back to people and comment on people's posts and stuff, because I have a different perspective from many people. Like, you know, I really, because of my own healing journey and the depths of trauma and the depths of shame that I experienced, you know, I generally kind of can have a bit of a different view on things. And so essentially, the community is just, I just want people to have a safe space where they're not going to get shamed. And that's one thing I just don't tolerate. I don't tolerate anyone telling someone that they should have done better, because should have isn't a word that ever exists in my reality. Because if you could have, you would have.
And you would have, exactly.
Should have is shit. And yeah, so that's pretty much it. Like,
I think that that is like one of the most crucial aspects of healing, is just having a place where we feel like we can share, not hold back at all, you know, and be accepted and heard and understood. That's, you know,
I just, like, sometimes I have people in the group just saying that, like, you know, sometimes I just really want to leave, I want to kill myself. And I love that because I don't fear people who are suicidal. You know, a lot of people fear people who are suicidal. I have clients that are suicidal. And I don't fear, you know, anyone that's suicidal, because suicidal, as I said, it's just a symptom. And so I want them to share that so that I can help them understand this is a part of you that feels a lot of pain. And I need people to understand that. Like, if you really tuned into that part of you, you would recognize that you don't want to leave this earth. You don't want to die. You just want the pain to end. We can feel the pain and move through it without killing ourselves, you know? And I love opportunities like that to be able to shine a light on things that people are too terrified to talk about. Same thing about, I want to hit my kid. You know, I do hit my kid. Great. Let's talk about that. Let's shine light on what's going on for you in those moments, you know, because this is because you are hurting. This is because you are wounded. And so ultimately, like,
I really prize the place and the space that I create, because I just want to make sure that people can find real truth, real information, and real answers to the stuff that people don't really want to talk about, or that they just are typically shaming and judgmental of, you know? And one of the things that I prize most really is like people healing themselves, rather than anyone being your guru or anyone else being the person that's going to bring you to the top of the mountain. My ethos is, you know best. I can be a guide. I can give you some of the awareness and some of the information that I've learned along my journey, but you inevitably are going to be your own master. You're going to be the master of your own ship. And until you get to that point, I can be here to guide you along the way, but don't give your power to anyone else. Even if they seem like they know, they're not you. They haven't been through what you've been through.
Yeah, I think that you and I were given a similar gift of like, just having that like boldness to just like fucking own it. And then other people then feel safe to do the same, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And yeah. And I have clients, I do inner child kind of coaching, I guess. And that's been great as well. You know, I love doing that. And I'll really like, my dream is to create groups, because I just feel like, you know, even just not even for a profit, but more so for, I feel like women, unfortunately, were really, really traumatized when it comes to other women. Like, I feel like it's so hard to have safe connections with women because of the mother wound and because of the way that we have been societally raised to judge each other. And, you know, I really feel like one of the things I learned from my own healing journey is I did a lot of it by myself. You know, I really was a lone ranger in my healing journey, you know, and I recognize now the power of having strong women with you, you know, other women that can heal alongside you, or mentors, or just people to be there, but women in their power, not women in that toxic, that toxic role, but women who are in their power, who are leaning into discomfort. And so, like, I guess my husband goes to a men's group once every 2 weeks, and you know, it's incredible. It's a place where like they all really just own their shit, own their pain, share that deep well within them. And I feel like I want to eventually just have that here, especially in Perth, just face to face, even for myself, so that we can all have a space where women are doing the work and they can create those connections in a safe way, because I have had so much trauma with women. It's taken me a very, very long time to trust.
To learn to trust. Yeah. I think that's a very common experience. You know?
Yeah.
So, well, this has been awesome. We'll have you back. I'll put all your shit in the show notes.
Amazing.
And you're a badass.
Thank you. You too. Badass divas.
Genius.
Men, if you're ready to reclaim your edge, listen up. I used to be held back by constant bathroom trips, with multiple wake-ups during my sleep and looking for restrooms whenever I was out. Then I discovered Better Man. After just 2 months, I started experiencing fewer trips to the bathroom, less urge to go, and I even slept through some nights. I feel a noticeable boost in my overall well-being, even sexual stamina. It gives me the freedom and confidence to live life on my terms. Better Man is clinically tested and trusted by thousands of men over 25 years. Ready to take back control? Go to BeBetterNow.com to order your supply today. That's BeBetterNow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Use as directed. Individual results may vary.